Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to The Approach Shot, the golf show that's more laughs than links, more stories than strokes, more guffaws than golfers. Here are the hosts of The Approach Shot, John Ashton and Neil Michaels.
And it is time for us, The Approach Shot. I am John Ashton. I know that much.
We be Neil Michaels. Well, no, I be Neil Michaels.
Yes, you do.
We be The Approach Shot. I be Neil Michaels. I should really work on my pronouns.
Taboo subject, guys. I'm sorry. We don't talk pronouns.
Actually, okay. Can I tell you something? Can I tell you what we've decided here? This has nothing to do with the fact that I lived in the South for 10 years.
Okay.
The whole pronoun thing, I totally understand it. I'm totally for it. 100% be who you are. Or as we just said, be who you be. And I have difficulty with the fact that being an older guy, they has always been plural to me, whereas they now could be singular. So instead of making a mistake socially, which interferes with my brain wanting to separate singular and plural, I now call anybody y'all. Y'all covers it everything.
It certainly does.
And as we know from being in the South, y'all is singular. Mm-hmm. All y'all is plural.
Exactly.
But yes. We don't need to get into that.
No, so not if, at all. This.
If you are of our generation and you're struggling with the pronoun thing, but you want to do the right thing, y'all is acceptable across the board.
Okay. I will notate that.
Y'all got that? So you had quite an experience with the eclipse, I hear.
Hey, man, it was great because where I live, I only had to go 20 miles to the west, which took me into the hinterlands of Indiana.
Hinterlands?
Yeah, okay. To play some golf, but it was in an area that was 100% totality.
That's incredible. I was watching the little map because I'm weird and old and do things like, you know, weather and maps and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I did not notice that it was going across the middle of the country. I thought it bounced sort of swooped down to Texas and then sort of came back up on east of you. But it sounds like, no, you guys were
no,
right
it was
there.
A little bit west of me. It was a small arc, and it kind of traced my radio career. Went from Dallas, Texas to Caribou, Maine, man. And all the things in between.
it was Eclipse John.
That's right.
Well, we did the same. I was back east with my kids, and we got the glasses and we sat out on my daughter's front porch, and 2:20 Eastern was the time that was supposed to be the peak. So we got out there about 2 o'clock or so and just, you know, hanging out and shooting bull and stuff. It was just like suddenly it got a little cooler. And as we put the glasses on, you could see it shrink a little bit. It got to look like a little banana. And then we noticed a precipitous dip in the temperature. I mean, it went from mid 60s to probably mid to upper 50s in 5 minutes. And it went from sunny to grayish and a little misty even. And I thought, wow, this is remarkable. And then 15 or 20 minutes later, it was right back to the way it was.
Well, we were on a golf course, and the totality in it where we were was like 3:02 in the afternoon.
Okay.
And we were on the green of the ninth hole, and it was getting hard to see. It was like playing in twilight, you know,
at 3 o'clock.
At 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's crazy.
And then we borrowed a pair of glasses and we looked up and there was a sliver of sun.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so remarkable that it was just a small sliver, but it was this bright. You know, it wasn't totally dark, but this teeny bitty sliver. And then a minute and a half later, the crickets are like, whoa, who set the alarm so early? What's going on here? You know, we're not supposed to be awake, but why is it dark? And we sat in the clubhouse and drank a little bit, and everybody was just hanging out because, I mean, it was totally dark. Could not play. Could not see.
Wow.
And then it brightened up much more quickly than it darkened, it seemed.
I felt the same way.
Yeah.
And we noticed the same thing about birds and bees. We were, my daughter's front stoop, there's a little garden over to the right. And when it got close to 220, we heard no birds and we saw no bees flying around. Not that there was a ton of them, but it was eerily quiet. And you noticed that because of that.
Yeah.
And then you're right. 20 minutes later, birds start chirping, flying around. We see bees buzzing and things like that. And we thought, yeah, they all went into hiding thinking it was night.
Exactly.
Incredible.
They were so confused.
Incredible. Let's do it again 200 years from now, shall we?
What I could not believe, however, okay, I was guilty of driving 20 miles west because I could have played golf where I live and gotten 98.9% totality, or I could have driven 20 miles and got 100. I say, let's drive the 20 miles just for the experience, right?
Absolutely.
But I could not believe the people who had flown from like California.
Oh, is that right?
From New York. I mean, in New York City, you could have gone up to Buffalo and gotten it total, right? Tried to make a reservation at the golf course at French Lick. My friend who runs the director of golf up there, Dave Harker, said, John, I'm sorry, man, but we've been sold out for that day since December.
Wow.
And both of their hotels were totally booked.
Yeah. When I got back to Baltimore, my son said, I know you just got here and stuff like that, but do you feel like taking a 5-hour road trip to Buffalo, New York? And I said, no.
No.
93% is fine with me. And it's not 5 hours from Baltimore to Buffalo. It's 8 or 9 hours each way. So thanks, but no thanks. But I was texting my sister-in-law, who's in Corsicana, Texas, which is about 20 minutes or about 45 minutes south of Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Corsicana, because it's kind of out there a little bit in the sticks, has this gorgeous view of the sky. You know, there's not a lot of light pollution and things out there. And she said they were told by people who have lived there a lot longer that people will just drive from Houston and come down from Dallas. And, you know, Houston's a 4-hour drive and park on the side of the freeway and just get out and look up everything there. The little motels that are on the side of the highway, the Starbucks that is literally right off the highway and stuff, all of those parking lots were packed. And all people were doing was exactly what you and I were doing. They got lawn chairs out or they got camping chairs out. They got their glasses. They had whatever beverage they wanted. And they were just looking up for 2 hours or so. And then they were on their way.
There were signs, you know, those highway signs that change that somebody is typing stuff in, you know. All of them along Interstate 64 headed west were like, no stopping to view the eclipse. Keep moving.
Why do I feel like we missed a big opportunity to make some money here? It had to be something.
We did. But it's not the first time.
That's right. Maybe we could have just passed out approach shot discs or something of previous shows and said, hey, you know, while you're sitting here, if you need something to listen to while you're looking up,
man. But you know what? What is hard to understand or hard to believe or hard to comprehend is that the sun is exactly 400 times larger than the moon.
All right.
And is exactly 400 times further away from Earth than is the moon.
Wow.
That's the only reason an eclipse works.
Wow. Look at you doing your research. You said you talk about me doing my research with the, with our guests. You have done your eclipse research, and we didn't even know we were going to talk about this.
I'm just a science geek. What can I say?
You certainly are the second part of that anyway.
So what kind of research are you going to regale us today on basketball?
Well, I got to tell you that we have somebody that if he was standing in front of me while I was looking at the eclipse, he could have blocked the whole damn thing.
Totally eclipsed your view, indeed.
Travis Reed, who was a basketball player at UCLA and Long Beach State and played internationally, is going to be joining us to talk about playing basketball in the States, playing basketball internationally, and then transitioning out of playing into what he is doing now, which is, you know, what you and I do, which is sitting behind a microphone and talking to people.
That's it, exactly.
And he is a cool dude. And I will tell you this, I feel really bad looking back on this, but this is our 118th show and our first interview with a basketball player.
And hopefully we'll pull it off kind of well. Let's see.
Yeah, but I wasn't so worried about that as I was like, look at this vast majority of people that played in the NBA that are doing what we do that we could talk to. So, you know, hey, Travis, no pressure. But if this goes well, we'll be talking to more basketball players. If not, screw basketball. We'll stick with football and baseball.
Hang out with us and see how good this happens. We'll be right back.
We are the Approach Shot.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And we promised we'd be back with Travis Reed, and we have never lied to you. 118 episodes, and we have never lied. We're back with Travis Reed. I'm John Ashton. This is The Approach Shot.
I'm Neil Michaels, and we have never said we're back with Travis Reed before.
No, we have not said that before.
So it would be a whole new thing anyway.
Oh, okay.
Travis, welcome to the show.
Definitely appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
It's fun since we joined the Believe Network to be with brothers in the Believe Network, especially when we do it without their help, because you and I hooked up without having to call them. So we'll call them later and tell them, you know, what we did behind their back, and they'll love us for it. For those of you who recognize the name, which should be many of you, Travis played basketball at Long Beach State and at UCLA. And then, and I know you've been asked this a billion times, so we'll make it a billion and one, played professionally, internationally in the Netherlands, Estonia, Romania, Australia, and Germany, was the league MVP in Holland, was the Baltic Basketball League Player of the Year among his many accolades. So why internationally instead of in the NBA?
Back then, you know, in my mindset, I was like, look, the G League at the time, it didn't make that much money. Players made about $2,000 to $2,500 a month, and they would stay in places like Willacoochee, Georgia, or, you know, New Mexico. And I just wasn't in like two bedroom apartments where four guys were sharing it. And I just wasn't looking for that. I was, you know, a friend of mine played in the G League and said, like, look, bro, if you want to do that, that's cool. But you're going to be playing games at like 7, busing 8 hours to the next city, getting up, things like that. And I was like, man, I don't know if I want to do that. You know, yeah, said, you know, maybe you can go overseas. You can make $100,000 off the rip. Can I? And then so my eyes lit up like, oh, my.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, like $2,000 a month to $100,000 a year. You know, I went to Bogota, Colombia, which was the first place I went to. I was like, you know, I'm gonna continue. I signed a contract to go different place, you know, go play in different places, Poland, you know, things like that. So I just continued to play overseas, because if you're a good player overseas on whatever team or whatever league, they're gonna try to sign you before you leave the country. You know, so for me, it was like, I would say no to the first contract. No. But by the time April came and the money was like, you know, maybe double or something like that, I was like, ah, you know. NBA.
The big thing here in Louisville back in 2013 when they won the NCAA, that they had to vacate for whatever reason. But Pitino was coaching all of the guys, all the seniors on the team to go play internationally rather than to the NBA, because he said, you're not going to make any money if you go to the D League at the time. And he was telling me, he said, you know, that if you do really well and you get your heart set on the NBA, then go there, make a name for yourself, and then come back. That's what they all did.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. Trust me. Obviously, you're not going to make $50, $60 million in Europe. You know, and that's just not, maybe Kobe, you know, God versus, maybe Kobe could have, maybe LeBron could. Honestly, like, but you can make a very, very good living. You know, I remember I played against Marc Gasol right before he came to, got drafted by the Lakers and went to Memphis. Mm-hmm. He was making like $2.5 million a year.
But you were 22 at the time, right? You'd come out of college. And so you're definitely a young man. You got your Lakers hat on. You went to UCLA. You played in Long Beach. So you're a Southern California boy. It's not like you grew up in Holland or you grew up in Romania. This is not just about playing and making the money. This is a total life change. At that age, did it scare the crap out of you?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
In one word, yes. I think it scared my mother more than it scared me.
No kidding.
Yeah, she was like, you know, like almost didn't want me to go. You know, like, oh, it's going to be crazy. Who's going to take care? I'm like, Mom, I'm fine. I don't care how old you are. You're still my baby. And I'm like, all right. You know, I'm a grown man. I have a son. You know, I'm like, Mom, he's your baby. He's your grandchild.
Yeah, right.
I'm not your baby, though. No, you're always my baby. it was a different lifestyle because, you know, obviously being in Europe, I'd never been to Europe beforehand. And going over there was an adjustment, to say the least. You know, yeah. You don't know the language. You don't know the people. You don't know the situation. The main thing is like, you don't even know about the money. Sometimes sponsors leave. I've seen the biggest sponsor leave the team. And, you know, I've seen teams be like, look, we don't have this month's check, you know, we have 2 or 3 months to go in the season. And like, it's too late to go anywhere else. I got to stick it home, you know, so I'm going off their word, you know, you just never know. And that's how it was when I went to Europe. It was just, you know, it was one of those, like, he didn't know, but hey, you need to have a job. You needed to work. And that was basketball. I still love basketball. And I was like, well, they're going to pay me good money. So why not go?
Now you're 6'8" and you're a left-handed shooter.
Yes.
So you already have a really small group of guys that you can look at in NBA history, David Robinson, Bill Russell, Dave Cowens, Willis Reed. There were a lot of guys. Well, actually not a lot. There were a certain number of guys that were like you, big men who shot left-handed, but not a ton of them. Did you take anything from them and incorporate that in your game?
Well, the person I looked at the most probably was a guy by the name of Ed O'Bannon. Hmm. If anybody knows California basketball, Ed O'Bannon is one of the, you know, California history, but anybody knows NCAA, he is the first person to win against NCAA in court about name, image, and likeness. He was the first person. Because back when I was in college, they had a game called NCAA basketball and NCAA football. Mm-hmm. They were like the number one selling games on PlayStation, you know, for EA Sports.
Right.
At the time. You know, I was on the game. He was on the game. One of his friend's kids was playing it, and he was like, is that me? You know, like, you know? He said, yeah, that's you on the game. And he didn't get any money. None of us did. Mm-hmm. But we were playing a game of ourselves. And he took the NCAA to court. And he won the first junket. You know, that was the first kind of victory. If people want to know where the name, image, likeness, all that stuff came from, he was the start of it. And because he won the first one, he kind of was the first one, the first pioneer of it. But yeah, like Ed was a great player. UCLA won in the last national championship, UCLA. I loved his game. And I loved his younger brother, too, Charles O'Bannon, too. He was left-handed as well.
Yeah.
You know, he played in the NBA for a little bit, was on that team. I thought about them a lot, you know, as far as patterning my game off left-handed players.
It's so interesting because as I was sort of going through that, you know, you sort of run that in your head like, oh, left-handed players, David Robinson, Bill Russell, Willis Reed, Dave Cowens. Okay. this hand and this hand, and that's pretty much it as far as guys that actually had success. And it was like they either had great success or you almost never heard of them. So it was really interesting, especially then add to that that you bring that big body and that left-handed game to Europe, which you already know nothing about. And they're probably looking at you and thinking, what the hell is this? You know, how did they defend a guy your size? Because I know over there, they're not quite as big. How did they defend against you?
Well, I would say, you know, they're bigger guys, but they're maybe a little bit slower, less athletic than guys in the States. The super athletic guys are always in the States. But let's just say, like, obviously Joker is the number one player in the world, right?
Right.
But the big man in Europe plays similar to him. They can shoot it a little bit. They can shoot the 15, some out to the three-point line. They're good passers. They create double teams with their size. They know how to, like I said, they know how to make easy little dump-offs, things like that. They play just like him. He played just like Sabonis, not the son Sabonis, but the dad Sabonis.
Right.
Not as athletic, but, you know, just a great, great player. So for me, I had to adjust my game from college to pro and learn the little tricks of the trade, learn how to play. Because, like, in Europe, it's a lot of mental, how to manipulate the refs and how to manipulate the games. And so for me, I had to learn how to do that as a player. You know, when I was overseas, I had to learn how to grab a guy's arm, put him close to me, fall down, and get a charge.
Acting class.
You had to learn. Trust me, my first year, I must have led the league in charges because the European guys just fall off. You know, so I had to learn that after my first year playing. And so I learned the little tricks. And like if I'm looking at the rim and somebody comes to my backside, I'm falling. Like,
Hey. Got to make the noise too. So that's the refs hear you.
Got to make the noise when I go to the basket. Hey! I would tell you this. The refs know the best players in the league are. And they know that the money players, people want to see them because they're paying money to these players.
Right.
So the money players in certain leagues ain't fouling out.
Okay.
And they might foul out of games, but consistently they're not going to foul out. I can promise you that. A ref went on record that he didn't say his name, but he went on record when I was overseas in Holland. He was like, you know, guys like Travis Reed, Leon Rodgers, Travis Young, those guys are not going to foul out.
That's almost like a get out of jail free card.
In a way, yeah. I think like they'll call fouls and you get to four. Mm-hmm. But you know, that fifth one, unless it's egregious, I don't know. No, it wasn't on Travis. It was on 25, you know.
Hey, Travis, let me ask you a question, man. When you start playing in a country where you don't know the language, do you learn like specific trash talk phrases so you can, you know, intimidate out there in the court or what?
Well, I would say I had to learn a little bit of Spanish because when I was in Colombia, they spoke no English, not even the coach. So it was, they might have been one player on the team that spoke English. Everything was in Spanish. The coach would go on for like 15 minutes pregame, mm-hmm. talking about da 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 da. And I'd be like, I'll ask the Spanish teammate. He'd be like, I'll be like, what did he say? He talked for 15 minutes. He said, get the ball to you inside. He's like, more or less, get the ball to you, you know, when you're open. I'm like, all right. Okay, I guess. So I learned a little bit, but not enough to really talk trash. Like most of the guys I played against knew English. You know, they knew what to say. I knew, you know, I could talk to them in English. So the person I only seen talk who was American, who talked trash in another language was Kobe in the Olympics.
Okay.
Somebody from Argentina, I can't think of his name, but he was talking to him full conversation in his language. That I've never seen before.
That's pretty incredible.
It is great.
Well, and the interesting part about being 6'8 in Europe is your record shows that you are a power forward / center. In the NBA, back in the day, Bill Russell was, I think, 6'9 or 6'10 mm-hmm. and was a power forward center. There's a lot of parallels there in that you're quick. You had the inside game to be a center, but you also had the quickness that probably drove those big 7'2" slow, big-footed guys crazy.
If you want to say, you know, like it was kind of like the introduction to small ball in a way.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was like, most of the time I played power forward, but sometimes I did play center. Mm-hmm. And when I did play center against, like, for example, you know, when I played against Marc Gasol when he was in Spain, he was just too big. He was kind of like Shaq out there. He was just too big to stop for me. But it was hard for him to stop me with my quickness. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the teams that I would play on, we would have another tall guy. He would play the, you know, the bigger guys unless he would get in foul trouble. I would play the tall guys, but I would try to use, you know, beat them up and down the court.
Yeah.
You know, use my athleticism, you know, to beat guys. Because a lot of the teams, especially the big money teams, they had 2 and 3, 4 7-footers, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, for me, I was just like, okay, well, I don't really care. I'm used to playing against bigger guys. So I can use my height, my strength, and my mind to, you know, manipulate the system with them.
And being 6'8 must make you a pretty good power player on a golf course, too.
Well,
you'd think, right?
I promise you this. I did it, and I was just like, I have a whole nother level of respect for golfers.
We'll delve into that a little more deeply when we come right back. Travis Reed is our guest. We are the Approach Shot. Hang out. We'll be right back.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And we are the Approach Shot, and we are back. I am John Ashton.
I'm Neil Michaels, and you took it right out of my head, John. I was thinking, and we should probably just start with this. At 6'8", is the height an advantage to your golf game, or is it a disadvantage to your golf game?
I would say if I'm making the long hit, like with the driver, it's an advantage, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The putting, not so much. You know? Getting down super low.
Yeah, long arms, tall guy, athletic trunk, and powerful legs. You add that up, and that is a perfect equation for a 280, 300-yard drive, even if you are a left-hander. You play left-handed golf?
No. It's funny. I'm ambidextrous, so
okay.
I play basketball with my left, but I do everything with my right. I write with my right hand.
Okay,
I do all
this, cool. You know? For those of you who are not watching on YouTube, he just said, I write with my right hand and used his left hand to show us how he does that. Yeah, I would think 6'8", standing over a putter that can't possibly fit you well, you can't get that trajectory the way it's supposed to, because those of us who are 6', 6'1", yeah, I think golf clubs are made for us, putters are made for us. Did you have a putter specially made for you, or are you bent way the hell over?
I did part two. So one of my teams that I played for when I was in Australia, we got a chance. One of our main sponsors was a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a chance to go like a couple times. They would have like, you know, celebrity things, or they would want me to come and things like that. So we went a couple times as a team. I went a couple times as a player, just to have fun, you know, just to try, you know, do 18 holes. And the putting was just, oh my God. Like, I had to kind of like stretch my back out every time I would, you know, putt. Like, okay, let me stretch. Putt, okay, let me stretch.
Because your eyes are too far away from the ball, man. It's hard. It's just hard. Yeah, sorry.
Just imagine it's hot. You know, you've been probably a little intoxicated. So the ball is already moving around.
So just hit the one in the middle. Yeah. Just hit the one in the middle. Well, since you played in Estonia and Romania, you know, those countries that are clearly by the seaside and just beautiful. No, they're hot as hell. Do you play better out of the sand? I mean, I don't mean for that to be as stupid as it sounds, but it sounds like you probably played on a lot of hot ground and in a lot of dirt.
Well, I would say, yeah. Yeah. Plus, my ball was usually in the rough. So I had to
kind of, how did you get there? Out of the
rough a lot. You know, when I was in Australia, it was like that. It was a lot of rough. And in Australia, it was, even though we had, you know, driving carts, it was just so hot, you know, yeah. And it was just, you know, by hole 12, I'm exhausted. I'm like, oh my God, mm-hmm. We got 6 more to go.
Yeah.
Oh, whoo. You know, yeah. Like I said, I give props. The pros, you know, they're shooting with under 70 or 80, whatever the case is. I'm just like, all right, if I can keep it under triple digits, I'm happy. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. John likes to tell people like you and me that the average golf score is
105.
So if you're keeping it under 100, you're doing all right.
Yeah. Like I want to say 99 or 100. It was like right there.
I have a friend who tells me he shoots in the 80s. He refuses to play if it gets any hotter than that for the same reason.
So we've talked to a lot of athletes on this show, and especially when you get in like a charity tournament,
mm-hmm.
People see 6'8", Travis Reed, basketball player, smooth, got the moves, got the muscle and stuff. And they got to think, we're going to win. This dude, look at this dude. How quickly do they realize that you're there to be the celebrity and to tell great stories?
Probably around hole one. They'll see the swing, and it's not as bad as Charles Barkley's, but it's not that good.
Well, you know, if you're comparing yourself to Barkley, come on now.
That's the only person I've seen that has a terrible slice. You know what I'm saying? So, for myself, I'm just out there to have fun and, you know, like just, you know, have a good time. You know, what I have realized about the golf is that, you know, I like driving ranges, you know, just because, you know, it gives you a chance to whack it as much as you want. Like when you're going on, you know, certain holes and you got to hit it, you know, maybe 150 feet instead of like 200-300, whatever the case is.
Yeah.
Those are the ones like that I just really struggle. It's a struggle. So
your short game's not the best. What you got in the bag is what you're trying to tell us, huh, Travis?
I think I need to go to Happy Gilmore School.
You know what the problem is, Travis? You're thinking about playing in terms of meters instead of yards. So when you're standing 60 yards away from something, you're thinking, I got to hit it 180 meters or something, and you overshoot the green. Because
I can be the king. Whatever you say.
There you go. I'm helping you. Next time you can use that if you want to. Hey, listen, let's talk for a minute before we get into the third segment here about your podcast, because you do a ton. I thought, you know, when I looked you up, I thought, oh, he does an athlete's journey on YouTube. But then I saw that you did He Said, She Said, which is another podcast that you do. And then you do Believe in UCLA. You're a busy guy. What's got you behind the microphone and what do you enjoy the most about all this?
Well, I enjoy, you know, like the conversations, being able to just kind of be free and open with my interviews and, you know, obviously talking about the game. For myself, I think that, you know, when I realized that I was, you know, I really enjoyed podcasting was probably about, you know, a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. When I started, maybe 2 years ago, whenever it was when I started, I just enjoyed the fact that, you know, I could just kind of be free, easy going, kind of just, you know, be relaxed in a relaxing kind of setting. When you're playing sports or things like that, when you're going to interviews or whatever, it's always, you want to make sure you don't say the wrong thing. You know, you want to make sure you don't say some bulletin board material. You don't want to say anything disrespectful, or you don't want to seem conceited. You don't want to, you know, it's a lot of stuff that you got to go into your head.
Right.
You just want to be, you know, understood correctly. With the podcast, you kind of just be free. And yeah. For me, like, that's what made it, you know, like, I could just be free and just talk about whatever I want to talk about. Obviously, interviewing the athletes or talking about UCLA or whatever the case is. He said, she said stuff. And just being free. And that's why I enjoy it.
I love that you have been interviewing a bunch of people that you call your California legends, because I love that you've interviewed Sheldon Williams, Marcus Ogden, some big people, but I like the fact that you stick to your roots, the California legends. There are a lot of guys that you've interviewed that aren't necessarily A-listers necessarily in the sports world, but they mean something to you and they mean something to the area that you grew up in. That's cool. And is that something that you do on purpose or is that something that just comes from you?
That's something I do on purpose because I feel like, you know, and this, I might be a little bit biased. I think that my era of basketball was some of the greatest basketball ever played in California. I think my 97 class, as far as high school, was, you know, the best California class ever. And just my, like I said, this is my opinion. I don't know, about six or seven, like, NBA guys. We had Baron Davis, Jason and Jaren Collins, Jeff Trepanier, just to name a couple. And then we had, obviously, the biggest name, or one of the biggest names in high school history, in Shea Cotton. Guys like myself and Kenny Bruner and Kevin Bradley and Mike McDonald. And just the names could go on and on and on about great players in that 97 class. And so I just feel like back then, unlike now, where you can become YouTube famous before your game is actually as good as your name, you had to earn your name back then to where, like, okay, this guy's Travis Reed. Okay, he's a good player, quote unquote. Show us. So it was word of mouth. So if I went to a tournament and played terrible, my name will go down. You know, then another guy's name will go up. If I would go to a game against another top guy, and that's how he was. It was every game he was going against a different top guy.
So it was your basketball prowess and not your marketing ability.
Yes. Yes. Now it's, you know, a guy can have a couple dunks on, you know, YouTube and he's famous. Like, oh, my God, these guys. Back then it was, you had to earn everything. You had to earn your name. So I want to make sure people know about these California legends like Tremaine Folks, Chris Johnson, you know, Jeff Trepanier, these guys that might not be quote unquote big names, but they're California legends, you know?
You know, what's amazing about that is that John lives in Kentucky and we talk crap all the time about Louisville, Kentucky. I grew up in Maryland. So when Maryland was part of the ACC, I talk crap all the time about Maryland versus Carolina versus Duke versus Wake versus NC State. I mean, the three of us grew up in basketball rich areas. If I had a podcast, I would do the same thing. It would be all about ACC basketball back then and how great it was. And John would do the same thing about Kentucky basketball, not Kentucky, not the University of Kentucky, but Louisville. Right,
the state of Kentucky. Travis is a UCLA guy. Louisville basketball is one of the top six programs as far as wins go. And it's all because Coach Wooden's assistant in 1971, a guy named Denny Crum, came to Louisville and stayed here until like 1994.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's the one that built the program and the reputation and won all the championships, man.
Yep. And you can say the same thing about Coach K and Duke and, you know, at Lefty Drizel in Maryland and Roy Williams in Carolina. I mean,
yeah, you can trace these guys all back.
That's right. And they made basketball rich and things that we could just wrap around us and be like, this is our team. This is our conference. This is what matters. And I can talk all day long about loving that. John can talk all day long about loving his, and you can talk about California, and none of us are wrong. Well, you guys are wronger than I am, but you know.
Well, I definitely can agree with that. I think that, obviously with Maryland, you know, UCLA is coming to the Big Ten next year, so we will see you soon.
And I stopped caring when they left the ACC. That wasn't my Maryland anymore.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I do have a question when it comes to Kentucky. Is Kentucky sad or happy that Calipari left? I wonder.
Calipari has not won a first-round NCAA tournament game in 4 years. That's 2 years too many for the Big Blue Nation to put up with. So,
I think his shtick was like, oh, yeah, I get a lot of NBA guys. But I think Kentucky kind of got sick of that. Yeah. They want to see wins with the NBA guys that you're bringing up. Right?
Yeah, they didn't want like the one-and-done thing. They didn't care if you went to the NBA after 1 year playing for Kentucky. They wanted you to stay at Kentucky and win something.
Win.
Yeah. So. Wow. He left Kentucky to go to Arkansas? I know. You know,
and if he had just waited to get fired, they would have given him $33 million. But, you know.
You know, I think they were like, we're going to just play this thing out.
Exactly.
You know, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with Kentucky.
Yeah.
But Yeah.
Well, we both have new coaches now because Louisville fired Kenny Payne. You know, Kentucky's got a new coach. So
I played against Louisville when I was at UCLA. We beat them at UCLA, and then we lost to them at Louisville the following year. And yeah, I remember Danny Crum because in 80, I forgot what year, 80 something, 85 or something. Louisville beat UCLA in the championship game.
86.
86, there we go.
86, yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. And my coach, Coach Holton, he was on UCLA's team. Never got over it. He still hasn't.
That's like,
you're not
like,
supposed to get over those.
That's like players for Kentucky or fans of Kentucky. On April Fool's Day, there was a big headline in the paper that they had just hired Christian Laettner as an assistant coach at the University of Kentucky. Wow. It was the guy that shot that half-court shot that beat them in NCAA.
I watched it. I was a kid because I didn't, I didn't necessarily like Duke at that time. So I was like, all right, Kentucky. And then he hits the shot. Oh my God.
Yeah. But let's talk about the six pack when we come right back. Can we do that?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I was asking for permission.
Okay.
Okay. We'll be right back with our guest, Travis Reed, right here on The Approach Shot.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And we are back, The Approach Shot, with Travis Reed. I am John Ashton.
I'm Neil Michaels. I'm trying to get the knife out of my chest from mentioning Christian Laettner, because, again, I went to Maryland, and watching that SOB hit that shot, still hurts. Hey, Travis, it's time for the six-pack. We're going to fire off six questions at you. We want to get the first thought that comes to mind. If we think you're hemming or hawing, we're going to give you a So we want that first thought. You down?
Yes. Yes, sir. Right,
let's do this. Question one. As we discussed, you are the host of several shows, including An Athlete's Journey, He Said, She Said, Believe in UCLA, and more. Who's the one person you interviewed that you personally enjoyed the most?
I would say Matt Barnes.
Really? How come?
Because, Matt, obviously, he has the number one or one of the top shows podcast in the world, and I was like, for him to, he's a busy guy, he's on ESPN, all this other stuff, so for him to, even though I know him, we went to college together, for him to come back with me and do the interview, make time, I was happy for that.
That's how we feel today.
Yeah.
It is, it's funny, we never talk about this because it's pulling back the curtain, but there is something nice as a podcaster when you get somebody who not only that you connect with, but that you looked up to, because it's not so much hero worship as it is just validation for what we do. And I think that's a great answer. And he's a terrific guy anyway. You're blessed to have him on. All right. Question two, fill in the blank. If only I could improve blank, my golf game would be so much better.
Everything.
We did ask for your first answer.
You said the first thing that comes in my head, that's everything.
You're right. If you could improve everything, it would get better.
Couldn't get any worse.
All right. Just leave it at that. Question three. There have not been many, but as we talked about, there have been some extraordinary left-handed basketball players. And I forgot to include Zion, shame on me for that one, and Ben Simmons. So, I'm definitely old school on this. Who was your favorite to watch growing up?
Ed O'Bannon.
You're definitely not old school, man.
Well, I don't know. I never saw, the obviously Bill Russell and Collins and all them. I was a little bit I'm not that old.
Ouch.
But like I said, my favorite guy that I saw that was left-handed, silky smooth, long, Zed O'Bannon. He was super nice, especially in college, especially UCLA.
There you go. Sorry, David Robinson. I thought for sure he was going to say you.
But Ed and his brother, just the old Banyans, Ed and Charles. I love both.
You know, your UCLA is showing, because the O'Bannons were great and everybody in UCLA knew they were going to take over the NBA, and they had good careers, but they were not the super studs that I think everybody who's a Bruin thought they would be.
Yeah, sometimes that happens. I think that it's all about right team, I think. I mean, number one picks are number one picks, but I think, you know, once you get past the lottery, it's all about right fit. I never thought that Ed and Charles went to the right fit for their skills.
100%. On my other podcast called Shootin' Bull, we were just talking with Ed Marinaro, and he talked about how in college he was a runner-up Heisman Trophy, and he went to a system that didn't fit his running style. So he was okay. And then he went to the Jets, where it was exactly his college running style, and he had, you know, a couple hundred yard games and stuff, and he was really feeling it before he got injured. So many athletes that we've talked to have said, right system, right fit, wrong system, wrong fit. It doesn't matter how good you are.
Yep. If you're in, that goes for all sports, basketball, football, baseball. If you're a run and gun type of player and you go to a slowdown kind of system, we got to run plays. It might eventually work, but it doesn't necessarily fit. I think unless you're somebody like LeBron, who is the system,
right?
I think that you have to learn how to adjust, but it's all about fit, like right team, right scheme. I mean, look at Steph Curry's career.
Yeah,
he was a good player with Mark Jackson, but like, say that Curry didn't go to the Golden State Warriors. Say Curry went somewhere else.
Absolutely,
would be Steph Curry? I don't know.
Okay, question four. Travis, if you could have a cocktail and talk sports with anyone at any time in history, who would it be?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
That's a call. That's a call. Yeah. Yeah, he kind of, speaking of guys who changed things and became the system, right? I mean, he was a super stud as Lou Alcindor in Milwaukee, but when he came to L.A., everything changed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Including the stupid eyewear. How did he make wearing goggles look cool? I have no idea.
Obviously, and this is just my opinion, I think he's had the greatest career, basketball career in history. Mm-hmm. He won national championships in high school. He won three national championships in college. He was the greatest college player ever. 88-2 record, three national championships, three Final Four MVPs. And the team, back then they couldn't play as a freshman, so the team that won the national championship that year, his team beat them. The freshmen beat them. So
wow.
He would have been 4-for-4. And obviously, six MVPs, six championships, second all-time leading scorer. I would love to just sit down and just pick his brain, because he's such a smart man. He's written, 6 or 7 books. I read a couple of them. I would sit down with him all day and just talk to him about basketball.
Absolutely. Not just about basketball, but about world.
Life. Yep. Yeah, everything. Yep.
All right, question five, true or false? Being an athlete that is 6'8" and playing golf is not a lot of fun. So I would love it if I could become 6'2" when I was playing golf.
True.
Really do need a longer putter, don't you? All right, and question six, and we ask this of everybody who comes on the show. Since we are the approach shot, Travis Reed, in your approach to life, what one rule do you live by?
Treat people the way you want to be treated.
Yes. Love that. Is that something your family sort of went by? Did you, your mom and dad sort of like drill stuff into your head growing up?
Yeah. I mean, it was started with my grandmother. She was very religious, and she always was, treat people the way you want to be treated. My dad was always like, give respect to people that respect you kind of thing. But never, my damn thing was always like, never be, he called it the big head, but like never be conceited, pompous or entitled. And for me, that's my main pet peeve. So I drill that into my son all the time. Don't ever feel entitled like you're entitled to this or entitled to that. You earn everything that you get.
Love that. Travis, you are off the hot seat. Good job on the six pack there, my friend.
Well, appreciate it. You know, hey, appreciate it. One of them, I was like, he's about to buzz me.
I was about to buzz you. Yep. I was about to buzz you on the fill in the blank. Yep. On that last question, I like how you talked about your son, and I like how you do the sort of, especially if you want respect, you earn respect kind of thing. Did you find when you were living in Europe and especially in places that were, you know, Holland is one thing, but Romania and Estonia or something else, did you find that their societies were different as far as that stuff goes?
Yes. Holland, obviously, it's more Americanized, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a bigger country. Even though it's not that big of a country, but it's real Americanized. Whenever people go to Europe for touring, like especially rappers, Holland is kind of the first stop on tour.
Is that
right? You know, Amsterdam, obviously Amsterdam, self-explanatory. Why?
Yeah.
Because a lot of rappers, so when I was in Holland, 50 Cent, Snoop Dogg, Justin Timberlake, all these guys was always going on tour there first on the European tour's first stop. Now, when it comes to Romania, countries that were part of the USSR and Yugoslavia, but they broke off to their own countries in like 92 or something, it was a different world. Estonia and Romania have American stuff, but it's just a different, you know, when it comes to that. But they take basketball very seriously. That's what I have realized. The one thing that they do that I've never seen anybody else do, so I have teammates, before the game, they'd be outside smoking a cigarette. And they would smoke a cigarette right before the game. And then at halftime, they would smoke a cigarette. And then it would, right after the game, they would smoke a cigarette. I was like, dude, you smoke. Did you chain? And so they would chain smoke. They're lighting a cigarette right after, you know, in the middle of.
Yep.
That was the only thing about me that I can never understand. Like, you smoke cigarettes and go play basketball?
Right. Professionally, yes.
Really good for your lungs.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh my God, dude. Like, that's what shocked me about, if you want to say European, like players in Romania, things like that. They would smoke cigarettes. Oh, woo. Never saw that before.
In the Netherlands, Estonia, Romania, Australia, and Germany, all the places you played, what one food that was there that isn't here do you still crave?
Oh, good question.
Thanks.
I would definitely say there's two things. One of them is extremely fat for you. And if you don't like it, I can understand. That would be in Holland. They have like French fries and they put mayonnaise with the French fries.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds disgusting.
It does. I thought it was too until I tried it. I was like, this is terrific. very fattening. You know, people think it's nasty, but I'm telling you, you go to Holland, you go to one of these little restaurants, I'm telling you, they serve it as fire. It's really good. The second thing would be these little things in Holland. They're like apple donuts. They're like donut balls, but they have like apple in them. I forgot what they were called, like crepes kind of thing. They were served during the winter time. So like, you know, November, December, January, February, they were hot. They would make them hot. So it would just melt in your mouth. It was just something just stupendous. I can't even.
It sounds stupendous. I'm sorry. Oh,
it was like a mix between a fritter, a donut, and apple pie all in one.
All righty then. I want one. All right.
Oh, Travis, it's been great talking to you, man. You're just up the street from me. I'm in the north part of San Diego. So, you know, sometime when I come up to L.A., we should hang out.
I'm in Rancho, but I go to L.A., you know, all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Take him on a game of one-on-one, man. Yeah, I got you, Travis. My money's on you.
You know what? I'll do that for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then you got to come with me, and we got to have a putting contest. So we can sort of balance things off.
Hey, I agree.
A shot I'm something.
I would beat you one-on-one, but you would probably destroy me in the putting.
Well, that's the idea.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I do the Top Golf. Top Golf is my thing because I get to just whack it.
Oh, it's just whack it. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, we won't be doing that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us and continued success on the podcast. We're listening. I love the Believe in UCLA, but I got to tell you, I love He Said, She Said, because there's 30 or so episodes. And I love the fact that big, bad basketball player on all this kind of stuff, growing up in LA and stuff. And then you turn into this like man trying to understand woman who's trying to understand man kind of thing. And I was like, dude is a softy and he's not letting on except right there. Take a listen to An Athlete's Journey. That's on YouTube, actually, with some great guests. Believe in UCLA and Travis Reed, A Basketball Life. I mean, you are everywhere. I hope people get a chance to tune in, listen to you. But, you know, they basically heard who you are here. So now you get it. Go listen to Travis.
Appreciate you guys having me on the show.
We appreciate you spending some time with us here on The Approach Shot, man.
Yeah, man. I had a blast. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, man, basketball for a change. 118 episodes. We finally managed basketball.
And we had to find somebody who was funnier than us.
Man, since we're talking basketball and he brought up all the names, I have a question that I would like to ask you, being Mr. Research Guru.
Okay.
People talk about the GOAT in basketball all the time.
Yeah.
And of course, it depends on the age bracket you happen to be in. There are younger generations who say, oh, definitely LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are generations who say, oh, definitely Kobe or Kareem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those are the three guys who get just the first name.
Mm-hmm.
And then right. There are other generations who say Jordan.
Yeah.
Or Bird.
Yep.
Magic. Nobody ever brings up, and we brought him up during the show, but no one ever brings up Bill Russell.
True.
Bill Russell, 12-year career, won 11 championships in those 12 years.
Yeah.
But is he just too old, too long ago? Nobody remembers? What's the deal with that?
No, I don't think so. I think that if you have the same conversation about baseball, there are people who will still give the proper credit to Babe Ruth.
Sure.
But they will also say Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Mickey Mantle, all the people who are in the sort of other generation. I think with Russell, he was underappreciated because he was a defensive player first. Just as chicks dig the long ball, fans like scorers.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things, one of the negatives that I have about the NBA is it's turned into nothing more than a run and gun.
That's not necessarily true. There are guys out there, and part of the reason I think the Warriors dominated earlier in this decade is because they did have defensive players. They did have specialists that didn't necessarily score, because that was Steph Curry's job. Steph was the guy who scored, yeah. And they had obviously other scorers, but they had guys who played defense. I think that's why the Warriors did what they did. I think that's partly why the Nuggets won last year, is because they had guys who played defense. I think the interesting thing, too, about Bill Russell, and I'm so glad you brought him up, because I'm like you, I think he's vastly underrated when you start talking about GOATs, is that he was in such a rivalry with Wilt Chamberlain, and that Wilt tended to overshadow him a little bit because he was such an offensive scorer, and the two guys and the two teams were so associated with each other that it made it hard to pick one of them out. I will tell you that if you ask me point blank who the best basketball player of all time was, there's no hesitation. There is no doubt in my mind it's Michael Jordan. It will always be Michael Jordan, and it will never be anybody else because of what he did to elevate the game. He was an unbelievable scorer. He also played defense. He also could rebound, but what he did with the championships, what he did to elevate what was otherwise a decent team, sorry, Scottie Pippen, you were just a good second guy, is turned the NBA into must-see TV.
Yeah.
There's nobody else that has done that. LeBron and Kobe certainly were very much that guy, those guys who took the baton and ran with it. And they should be considered in the next breath. But honestly, Michael Jordan and then everybody else.
Yeah.
Who's the GOAT in football?
Brady.
Tom Brady. That's the answer everybody gives. Who's the GOAT in basketball? Jordan? Yes. But could be Kobe, but could be LeBron, but could be Chamberlain, could be Russell, could be Bird, could be Bob Cousy, could be Magic, could be Kareem. There are a lot of guys who are right underneath that. In football, it's Brady. And there is no GOAT in baseball, which is the strangest thing that I've ever, you know.
Well, that's probably because baseball has been the popular sport for so long.
I just don't know that there's anybody who drove it the way Brady drove football and Jordan drove basketball. Here, I know you're not a big hockey fan. Who's the GOAT in hockey? Gretzky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
Gretzky. There's no other answer. Yeah. It's Gretzky. So it's so weird that there isn't that same GOAT in baseball. Again, Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle, Ty Cobb, Stan Musial, Ted Williams. There's a lot of guys who are incredible players.
Legends.
Legends. But there isn't one that is, I think, heads and shoulders above the rest like there are in those other sports.
Yeah. No, I don't believe there are. You're right.
John, who's the GOAT in golf?
Tiger.
Tiger. Tiger, Jack, or Arnie. That's the end of the discussion. Yeah. It's so funny. And I had this discussion with people recently. If you do a Mount Rushmore of golf, who are the four best? It's Arnie, Jack, Tiger, and...
fill in the blank.
Who's number four? There's four through 10, but there's not a solid number four. Bobby Jones, sure. Could be Gary Player. Could be Seve, could be Lee Trevino. There's so many guys that fit into that next group, but it's one, two, and three.
Yeah.
This is why we all sit around and shoot the shit with each other, and there's no right or wrong answer.
You know, number one is probably Tiger for everybody, but two and three is interchangeable.
Yeah.
Some people say Jack, others will say Arnie, but, you know.
And depending on how old you are, what you grew up watching, there are people who would say, no, it was... because without Jack and Arnie, there is no Tiger. So it's Jack first. And then there are people who are like, yeah, but Arnie was the personality that made people watch golf. Jack wasn't the personality. He was the great player. Right. But Arnie was the guy who got people to watch golf and be involved in golf and want to play golf. So it's, you know, it doesn't
matter. Well, we brought up golf. Quick aside, do you know why there are 18 holes on a golf course?
I have no idea. And of course, I know you do.
I do. I do indeed. Because back in Scotland, in the early days of the game, there even St. Andrews used to have 22 holes. Some courses had seven, some had 13. You know, it was basically how many could fit on the space they had. They were having a meeting once to try to make it uniform. And one of the gentlemen who was attending the meeting stood up and he said, and I'm not going to try to imitate his Scottish accent, but he said, you know, you may or may not believe what I'm about to say or care what I'm about to say, but I can tell you that, you know, because of the weather here, I take a wee nip on every hole and I have 18 shots of whiskey, of scotch, in one bottle of whiskey.
Wow.
So by the 18th hole, I am out of whiskey and that's when I stop.
Wow. Is that really the reason?
That's the story and I'm sticking to it.
Well, that's a damn good one. I like that. And after 18, even if there was some left, he probably fell over. Well, not if he's Scottish, probably not.
No, it's just one fifth. Come on.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's great. And I will bring that up with people when I'm playing golf so that if we're 18 and anybody's got a bottle, I'll be like, you need to be dry by then.
That's right.
You know what? This was a good time. I really have to do it again next week. By. Yeah, it's nice. Hey, you know what we should do? We should ask the people who are listening if they would do us a favor and go to approachshot.net, go to the page at the top that says talk to us, and let us know what you think of the show. Tell us what you thought of Travis. Tell us what you think of our stories. Tell us who you think the GOATs are. And just talk with us. We love the idea of the input that we're getting from people. And it, again, it's approachshot.net. And while you're thinking about it, go to the page that has all of our episodes. Listen back to a couple because we're real proud of some of the ones that we've done and some of the great guests we've had.
And it's golf season, so buy yourself a golf shirt.
All right. I mean, if you say ones. So. Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't want to drink it out of the bottle, if you think that's too gauche, get an Approach Shot coffee mug and drink it out of that.
I love how you like speak Scottish 1 second and then use a word like gauche right after that. Who's the gauche? Oh, that's different than who's the goat. All right. Well, then in that case, we will see you next time for the Approach Shot. I'm Neil Michaels.
I'm John Ashton. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to The Approach Shot with the Weekend Golf Guys. If you like this week's episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. And find us on the web at approachshot.net.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.